Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk.
On-demand audio.
I'm hearing a lot of claims out there from Democrats and the legacy media that Republicans are trying to gut the Federal Voting Rights Act. But this is an issue before the Supreme Court that went before the court today on redistricting. And our constitutional expert, Ilya Shapiro, senior fellow and director of constitutional studies at the Manhattan Institute, is back with us this afternoon. Ilya, how are you? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. You always catch me in interesting places. I'm taking the metro back home about one stop away.
Well, we'll make it quick then. It sounds like you got to get off to get home. So let's, on this case today, explain, because there's accusations, obviously, that are flying back and forth just politically on this with Republicans versus Democrats. But what is this all about? We are expanding our map here in Missouri, potentially. Does that also, this case that went before the court today, encompass what we're able to do here in Missouri with a map?
Only to the extent that there are racial shenanigans involved. So the court 5 years ago or so got rid of policing partisan gerrymanders. They threw up their hands and said the Constitution is silent about trying to take political advantage. But there's this whole jurisprudence about using race under the Voting Rights Act to make sure that racial minorities can, quote, choose the candidates of have the opportunity to choose the candidates of their choice. It's resulted in kind of a Goldilocks approach to districting. You have to consider race a little bit, but not too much. And the court is dissatisfied with this. And certainly based on argument this morning, it looks like they're going in the same direction, unless you can establish that there is some sort of racially discriminatory intent. If the intent is simply to take political advantage, and if there's racial correlations that happen to coincide with that, that's irrelevant. But it looks like the court is getting out of this sordid business of divvying up people by race and requiring districts to be drawn as minority-majority districts.
Is that something where, usually you have these arguments in the fall right now and then decisions don't come out until, June. Is this something that sort of needs to be expedited because of, the elections next year or not?
Well, the court doesn't like to have make decisions that change electoral rules right before an election. I'm not sure exactly what the drop-dead deadlines are for getting districts in place. Certainly congressmen need to know, candidates need to know where exactly they're running. Some states do have primaries that are before the end of the Supreme Court term, so that could be a problem. We'll see. This is still very early. It's only the second week of the new Supreme Court term, so it's not necessarily the case that they're going to wait until the end of June to decide it, but it's certainly shaping up to be, if they rule as I just described, to be one of the biggest cases of the term.
Yeah, and to me it sounds like, you tell me if my gut instinct is wrong here, that the Republicans may get their way then when it comes to the redistricting, the court sides, but then politically it seems to me that the Democrats are going to try to use that to their advantage, saying, look what they're doing, they're gutting the Voting Rights Act, without anyone really knowing the specifics of what, they're talking about, but you can go out there and that's your talking point because the Supreme Court weighs in on this.
That's right. I mean, and that's where the politics is going to be fought. Now, traditionally, the voter ID issue, another controversy in this area, has been used by both sides to drum out voters without really affecting the results of elections one way or another. So this, the Shelby County case a number of years ago, 10 years ago now, this will become a political issue. But the thing is, the Democrats complain about so much of what the Supreme Court does, it seems like it would be subsumed into that greater narrative.
Probably. Ilya Shapiro back with us this afternoon. Let me get your thoughts before I let you go, though, on the Middle East peace deal and just what's been happening and how you see this kind of moving forward. Obviously, a big, big day on Monday.
It's not coming from Brett Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you
what
know why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, well, the last remaining living hostages were released, which is obviously, I mean, thank God. I mean, it's a blessed day. There were a lot of hostages that were killed in captivity. And now, you know, the first four, for I don't know why there's only four. There's supposed to be, you know, 25 or 30 more, but Hamas claims not to be able to locate them or what have you. But even of those first four remains, bodies that were due to be turned over, one of them was someone else. So just like with the Bibas family, where they just put in some other corpse, here they're playing shenanigans again. And clearly they're already reneging on the round two of the deal. They're supposed to disarm. They're supposed to give up power. And we're seeing, you know, video of them seeking retribution against other Palestinians who they accuse of collaborating or are from rival tribes or what have you, the kind of internal politics, internal rivalries, what have you. So the deal, such as it is, beyond getting the hostages out, the live hostages out, and beyond Israel pulling back a little bit, I'm not sure how much it's going to flesh out. Israel still is destroying the tunnels that they know about. So that's a good thing that the terror tunnels are going to be gone. But in terms of control over Gaza and demilitarization, that's still very much in the air.
This isn't discussed very often in the American media, but isn't there, and this may get into the weeds a little bit, but doesn't Bibi face some sort of internal charges himself in Israel?
He does. And I don't know how the immunities work, whether somebody in power can be charged. Some parallels, I guess, to some of the cases before the Supreme Court involving President Trump. But that was something that President Trump mentioned in his speech in the Knesset. He asked he turned around and asked the president of Israel, not the prime minister, that's Bibi. He asked the president to pardon Bibi because all he's accused of this corruption involves champagne and cigars, things like that. So, Bibi's internal political future is very much to be decided. There's more apparently now within Israel, Trump is more popular than Netanyahu.
Well, that doesn't surprise me at all. It really doesn't. You know, and I'm really not shocked by that at all. Ilya, you have a great train trip. I hope your stop is coming up if it hasn't come up already. It sounded great. It didn't sound like you were on the metro, so I appreciate that.
The wonders of modern technology.
I know.
I just got to I'm actually speaking outside the station. I'm going to walk home just in time to make it to my my son's soccer game. So
that's awesome because I never even Sue. We didn't even hear anything in the background.
No,
wow,
that was incredible.
That was excellent. Well, have fun at the soccer game. I appreciate it. Thanks, Ilya.
All right, take care.
Here's President Trump, by the way, on the topic. This is what you worry about. You know, obviously, it's great that the hostages are back, and that's certainly a first step. But it wouldn't take too much for all this to just unfurl, right?
I'm Gaza. Will it take Hamas to disarm, and can you guarantee that is going to happen?
Well, they're going to disarm. They will disarm. And if they don't disarm, we will disarm them. And it'll happen quickly and perhaps violently. But they will disarm. Do you understand me?
So that's a great position to take, and I like it. But then how will it disarm? Because then the question becomes, will U.S. troops be on the ground? That's people didn't vote for that. I don't think President Trump wants that. But how do you enforce that? And how do you make sure that they disarm? And can you do that with the Israeli forces and the military might that you already have? That's where I think it gets a little tricky. In that same, and this is another one of those days, like I can literally pot up Fox right now, turn up Fox. That's radio lingo, pot up.
Yes.
But he's been taking questions for like a half an hour here at the White House on a variety of topics. Crime was the topic, Kash Patel, and they had a bunch of charts and things like that. We carried some of this before, you know, the start of the 3 o'clock hour and then got back into regular programming. But this is another one of those days where Trump's been on TV almost nonstop. He's been answering questions and fielding, you know, media shoutdowns and stuff like that. So on the shutdown itself,
the Democrats are getting killed on the shutdown because we're closing up programs that are Democrat programs that we were opposed to. So we're being and they're never going to come back in many cases. And we're going to have a list of them on Friday, closing up some of the most egregious socialist, semi-communist, probably not full communist, we're saving that for New York, but semi-communist programs, and we're closing them up. We're not closing up Republican programs because we think they work.
So no end in sight on that. Newt Gingrich was on Fox this morning saying that, you know, I agree with this to a certain extent. I think they're underestimating, the Democrats are underestimating Trump.
He's very tough. He's very strategic. He's very firm. And I think, frankly, that Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries, who, by the way, live about 1.1 miles apart in Brooklyn, in a city which is about to elect a big government socialist with weird values, their entire worldview is alien from most Americans. So they may think this is cool. Most Americans are not, in the end, going to want to raise spending, increase the deficit, in order to pay for people who, in many cases, aren't willing to work, or are cheating, or are illegal immigrants. And the Democrats don't seem to get it.
So on that front of Mamdani, I don't know why he did this, and I can't tell you how the whole experience went because I was getting ready for this show, but he went on with Martha McCallum this afternoon a couple hours ago on Fox and answered questions about the campaign, and we have a little audio of that. He's not a fan of Netanyahu.
You have said that you would arrest Netanyahu if he came to the United States. You've been very outspoken in your criticism of him. Do you stand by that? You would arrest him if he came here, if you were mayor?
I've said that this is a city that believes in international law, and this is a city that wants to uplift and uphold those beliefs. The
United States doesn't stand by the International Criminal Court.
It hasn't signed the treaty for the International Criminal Court. The International Criminal Court, however, has issued a warrant for the arrest of Benjamin Netanyahu.
But
as
what
it has,
grounds in the United States could you arrest
as,
him on?
As it has for Vladimir Putin, I've said that I believe that we should uphold arrest warrants by the International Criminal Court, and that you should do so only in abiding with all of the laws in front of us. I'm not going to make a new law to ensure that we can actually do this.
Do you think that Commissioner Tisch would allow you to arrest Netanyahu in New York City?
I've appreciated Commissioner Tisch's leadership of the NYPD, and I think that she's done a good job at lowering crime across the city.
But do you think she would go along with arresting Netanyahu in New York?
I can tell you that I'm going to exhaust every legal option in front of me, not to make new laws to do so.
Okay, that's interesting. Good luck with that. Can he give President Trump any credit here on this peace deal? We'll see what he says here. This is in the category of audio that I have not heard yet because Fred just pulled it for us.
When it comes to the ceasefire, I am thankful and I have hope that it will actually endure and that it will be lasting. And I continue to have concerns because I've seen reports still just this in the last few days that 5 Palestinians were killed by the Israeli military. And that's what gives me pause about issuing any kind of praise or celebration at a moment when it is still so in its infancy.
But what was the circumstances of that? You say automatically because Israeli military killed 5. So what were they doing, right?
Right.
That is an interesting question. What were the Palestinians doing that got them shot?
What I will tell you is that in that same moment, it is also one that requires a focus on ensuring that that hope, that belief in a better future is one that is emblematic in our policies right here in New York City as well. And that's what we're hoping to lead with.
Would you give President Trump credit or not, to any extent? Credit or not?
I think it's too early to do so.
Too early to say.
But if it proves to be something that is lasting, something that is durable, then I think that that's where you give credit.
I think he deserves, I mean, that's not an unreasonable answer there at the end. I think he deserves total credit for getting these hostages back.
Well, yeah.
Right? But, you know, this thing is no doubt fragile. And then I guess she asked about Hamas disarming.
Do you believe that Hamas should lay down their weapons and leave the leadership in Gaza?
I believe that any future here in New York City is one that we have to make sure that's affordable for all. And as it pertains to Israel and Palestine, that we have to ensure that there is peace. And that is the future that we have to fight for.
But you won't say that Hamas should lay down their arms and give up leadership in Gaza.
I don't really have opinions about the future of Hamas and Israel beyond the question of justice and safety and the fact that anything has to abide by international law. And that applies to Hamas, that applies to the Israeli military, applies to anyone you could ask me about.
Okay, a lot of blah. He's pretty slick, isn't he?
Oh, he's very
slick. He's very well spoken, and he's going to win this thing in a couple weeks, and it's going to be fascinating. You know, the thing that he says on the campaign is we're going to do, you know, President Trump said that he was going to lower costs, and we're going to actually achieve it. How?
Dude? Yeah, well, we don't talk about the house.
No, and so I'm very curious, you know, and I was in the camp very early on Mamdani to say, let New York City have him, right? See what he can do. Burn it down. Like, get, you know, there's going to be cops that are going to retire. Why would you want to be a police officer in New York when you don't get any support from the mayor of New York City? I would retire. If I'm on the cusp of retirement, hell yeah, I'm out of there, because we've seen what's happened in the aftermath of Mike Brown to these officers.
That's
and how
a good point, Mark. I wonder if there will be a mass exodus, or I don't know.
There has been some, you know, coverage along those. I don't know about mass, but look, people need their jobs too, and I get that. But if you're on the borderline of, you know, taking your retirement, you can go get a private security gig or something like that, this will definitely lean you in that direction.
Get more at 971talk.com.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.